Hello, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Tim Hustlebury.
And I'm Chris Kerr.
Welcome to what we hope is the first of many episodes of the Dugout Debate podcast, the podcast that digs deep into sport's hottest topics.
With the NFL and rugby union seasons kicking off over the last two weekends, we're going to look at a major issue that links them both, concussion.
We explore what concussion is, the potential long-term effects, studies looking into and assessing concussion, and the future of the NFL and rugby union. We hope you enjoy listening to it as much as we enjoyed making it. And now, over to Chris.
So Tim, what is concussion?
Okay, so basically, concussion is what's known as a traumatic brain injury that affects your brain function and can result either from a direct impact to the head or from large rotational forces. One of the sort of big issues with concussion is that it's not always necessarily obvious when somebody's had a concussion, because you're not always knocked out from a concussion, and in fact most of the time most people aren't actually knocked out from a concussion, and you know, you might not feel too terrible, you might feel a bit groggy, but otherwise fine.
So it is just generally any sort of head injury in a game.
It tends to be known as sort of a mild traumatic brain injury, but essentially it's any significant-ish blow to the head or from falling over where an injury occurs to the brain itself.
I guess that is quite ambiguous then, even in trying to determine what it is, so it is difficult for
exactly.
The physios dealing with it in the game.
Exactly.
So concussion is a massive topic in many different sports leagues. Why is that in particular?
Okay, so as we all know, recently there has been quite a bit of press coverage regarding concussion, certainly in the last sort of 3 or 4 years. We've seen the NFL has agreed to start paying out to athletes who are suffering as a result from a condition known as chronic traumatic encephalopathy, which is effectively brain damage that results, or sort of permanent brain damage that results from repeated concussions. So this could be sort of anything from 3 or more concussions upwards. So we've had that in the NFL. We've had sort of anecdotal cases from around the world of sport. I think we can all remember that there was a club close to my heart, a Tottenham Hotspur game in soccer, where the goalkeeper, Hugo Lloris, he had a blow to the head at some point in the game. He was sort of down and not out, but quite groggy and that sort of thing. But he didn't want to be substituted effectively. And he was walking off the pitch before turning around and coming back on and playing the rest of the game, which in the eyes of many, an incorrect decision, but it was the player who made the decision and not the medical staff themselves. And I think this is one of the bigger issues with concussion. It's not, well, obviously the condition itself, it can be terrible, but more to the point, it's removing the decision from the player's hands, because every player wants to play the sport that they're being paid to do, or even if it's just recreationally. Most people don't go off unless they absolutely have to. And with concussion, where you just feel a bit groggy, you just think, oh, stuff it, I'll carry on, I'll be fine after a bit of a run round, that sort of thing.
Exactly. They should be forced to trust in the medical professionals that are paid to look into this.
Exactly. I know we'll visit later how the game has sort of changed into taking it out of the professional hands, but to the same extent some sports move more slowly than others. And finally, one more thing about concussions. We're particularly interested in what happens to young people. So it can be children, it can be sort of early teenagers and that sort of thing. There was a young man in the UK called Ben Robinson who he was playing a rugby match and he suffered a blow to the head at some point during the game. And I think he may have come off for a bit, but effectively, it was determined that he was okay. He went back onto the pitch. He started playing again, and he got another blow, and then came off the pitch, and then died later that night. And that's an example of second impact syndrome, where two concussive events happen quite quickly after one another, and it can be fatal, as proved in this case. This is extremely rare. you only get sort of isolated cases of it, but it really does highlight the potentially catastrophic nature of this kind of injury, and it's not one to be messed around with.
Yeah, as you've mentioned there are a completely wide range of different incidents, from being a fatal injury right the way through to slightly minor head knocks, but they all need to be looked into with the same sort of severity and the same sort of importance. But touching on something else that you were just talking about there, there's obviously been the Hollywood film about concussion with Will Smith starring in it. And they focus on the fact that in 2011, players started suing the league for concealing the dangers of concussion. And obviously over 5,000 ended up bringing suits against the NFL. And I think it was about $1 billion US dollars ended up being settled on by the NFL so that they didn't have to come up with what was being hidden. What did you make of the film?
Well, we're obviously based in the UK for anyone who is actually overseas. And the film didn't really get much of a showing over here. It was only actually out for about a week in the cinemas. I think it was far more sort of open over in the US, and that's essentially because the NFL, while there's a good core of fans in the UK, it's not necessarily followed quite as widely.
Yeah.
So the story maybe not as relevant. But I really enjoyed it. Me and the other guys in the lab, who were all pretty keen on the concussion stuff, we went as a little group, and we thought we'd feast our eyes on Will Smith for a little while. And it's a good film. I really enjoyed it. I mean, it covers the story nicely. It sort of gives you a little view into the resistance that can be faced in the sporting world to something that potentially can damage the sport. While I'll accept that the film is a film, so it's got to be dramatized somewhat. I'm sure a lot of the stories that are portrayed within it are somewhat realistic. While I don't think that necessarily the NFL sending around people to threaten to harm him, certainly people telling him to keep shtum is, or keep quiet even, is not necessarily one, not necessarily something that didn't happen.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was good.
Going into a little bit more detail on some of the stuff that they mention in it. So they go through quite a lengthy list of symptoms that this CTE can cause, from forgetting things, saying different things that they wouldn't normally say, hearing voices, mood swings, behavioural changes, and obviously dementia and Alzheimer's as well. Yeah. Are all of those realistic?
Yeah, certainly CTE and concussion, this field is sort of, while well explored, it's still fairly new. I think that we've seen from the various sort of high profile cases of that were highlighted in the film, not everyone was affected the same. And of course, that depends on the specific areas of the brain that have been damaged by the repeated concussion. So in one person, it might be one area of the brain which makes them sort of hallucinate a bit, and somebody else it might affect their working memory and that sort of stuff. So again, this is one of these cases where it's very difficult to determine the specific effects person by person, other than the reported symptoms and signs of it.
Yeah, of course. And in the most extreme circumstances, they ended up leading to suicide in some of those players as well.
It can lead to mental illness, and we all know the sort of effects that can have on anyone. So it's not the direct consequences just being fatal, as with second impact syndrome. It could really wreck quality of life as early on as sort of your late 30s, early 40s, as we've seen in some of the chaps who have been affected by it.
Yeah. So Mike Webster, the guy that we were first introduced to in the film, they mentioned that he had more than 70,000 blows to the head, they believe, in his entire career. So he had an 18-year span in the NFL, and obviously a college career and playing as a kid at school as well. Before that is a ridiculous amount, isn't it?
Yeah, he was a center, wasn't he?
I think.
I mean, if there's any position that's going to give you a lot of full-on frontal attacks, it's going to be it's going to be at center. And these guys, they use their heads. You've got a helmet on, the guy opposite looks like a bit of a robot, you just got to stop that thing coming at you, you're going to get knocked on the head a few times. And he was more than a few times, I'd hasten to add.
Yeah, so even with that many blows to the head, on some of the scans that they mentioned in the film, they were clean, and it often took them looking really deep into the brain to be able to see the damage that had been caused.
The best time to look at somebody's brain is obviously when they're not using it anymore, so it's always a little bit too late for that if you're already in that stage. But as a theme that we'll mention quite a bit in this podcast is that it's just so difficult. It's so difficult to confirm when concussions are happening.
As you say, if you can't open, someone's head to look at it every time, and if scans aren't showing it, then how are you actually meant to know the damage that's being done?
Exactly.
So with the NFL starting this week, what is unique to the NFL, and what impact do the helmets have worn within this league?
So as I've just sort of mentioned, I think wearing helmets in any sport, it does. Other than sort of, we'll get onto maybe a bit of physiology in a second, but it can dehumanize the people that you're playing against. And I know certainly if you're looking at NFL versus rugby union or rugby league, the tackles that are thrown in the NFL, they're of significantly greater impact, and they're often a lot higher than what you'd expect to see in rugby union, rugby league. I'm not sure what the specific rules on the height of tackle in the NFL are. But I don't think there are.
There aren't, as far as I know. You can hit anyone anywhere.
Yeah. So in rugby union, rugby league, if you're not aware, you can't really tackle anywhere sort of above mid waist, I'd say. Is that?
Yeah.
That's correct.
And both of those sports are clamping down on it as well. So they're now making even bigger sanctions for players that are hitting above shoulder height, and yellow cards and red cards are becoming even more regular because of that.
Yeah. So having that helmet on in the first place, you feel safer, so you're more likely to fly at somebody hell for leather. And at the same point, you're less afraid of hurting them too badly because they've got the helmet on. By that logic, they might also use a bit of their head to be knocking them to the ground if possible, because the head is quite weighty. So the chances of damage are, you know, they're reduced to a point by the helmet sort of absorbing some of the frontal impact. But the major thing with concussions is not necessarily full on frontal impacts. This is what the average person might not necessarily know about concussions. The real damage is done when rotational forces are involved. Because if you imagine the brain is connected up by a load of wires, when you twist one part of the brain and not another part, what happens to the wire? It breaks, it shears, basically. That's what happens. That's a very simple point of it. So taking it back to American football, where there are helmets, effectively what you're doing to the head when you're wearing a helmet is you're putting a load more weight on it, and the brain is just connected at one point in the body, and essentially it sits in the brain in some jelly, and when you wobble the head, the brain wobbles with it. If you wobble it hard enough, it gives it a nice smack on the side of the skull. When you add rotational forces into it, basically by having a heavier weight, you increase the moment arm between where the brain is connected to the rest of the body and the rest of the head. So what happens is the rotational forces are actually increased as you fall over. So the shearing forces are greater, so you're likely to get more damage.
So they've tried to come up with a somewhat of a term or a way of looking at what the exact force is to get a concussion. And they came up with 60 Gs can give you a concussion.
Yeah.
And a common NFL hit is 100 Gs.
Yeah.
So that really says it, doesn't it? That it is a common thing.
Yes. There are issues with sort of putting absolute numbers on it, because it varies with the person's sort of muscular makeup. It varies with what just from person to person, and putting an absolute force on it is, you know, it's useful for everyone to sort of understand, but it's not necessarily that helpful in a practical sense, because if I'm smacked by an NFL player, I'm hell of sure it's not going to need 60 Gs to give me a concussion. it's a nice thing to have, but really the world of concussion is a world of grey, a lot of grey. There's no black or white. There are no easy answers.
So is there an argument then for, instead of using helmets, to try and use something that Petr Cech or Wayne Rooney's been seen wearing before, with one of these padded kind of skull caps that you also see in rugby? Would that have any impact?
So we'll talk about Skullcaps and rugby first. I'm sure most people in the UK have seen them, but if you're in the US, it's eminently Googleable. It's essentially just a little bit of padding that you put over your head, and that those do pretty much nothing to stop impact forces from affecting you. Essentially, what they're for, to stop you getting cauliflower ear, to stop you getting cuts and scrapes all over your head. I'm perfectly for that, but you don't want to go charging into somebody head first just because you've got one of these on. And we've seen Petacek with his head garment on, and then obviously when Wayne Rooney got his gash on his head, he had that special headband thing made for him. I would err on the side of, if you don't need to wear it, don't wear it, because it does have somewhat of a dehumanising effect. And you know, if you're thinking, oh, I've got this head thing on, let's go for this header really hard, and you go smacking the other player, you could do yourself some quite serious damage. I mean, we've seen what's happened to Ryan Mason, the Hull City player. He's been out for a very long time after fracturing his skull in a header with another player, and there's no helmets or anything involved in that.
So you do end up feeling more protected than you actually are just by this superficial thing that you've got on the exterior.
I think so. I think it does increase the recklessness a bit, and in terms of actual protection from concussions, I'm not sure it does a lot.
Yeah. So you'd actually want a shock absorber within your head, wouldn't you, to try and stop the brain from rattling around within your skull?
Yeah. Well, exactly that. Actually, I'm going to go a little bit off topic, and I'm going to talk about I think it's woodpeckers. Effectively, in their head, they have what's similar in shape to corrugated iron. So basically a corrugated iron structure somewhere in their beak, or maybe a bit further back. I've heard this on one particular podcast, but basically what that is, a shock absorber. So that prevents the brain damage in the woodpecker when they're really hammering the wood. So a lot of helmets now are being looked at, being designed in that sort of way, to have the sort of corrugated iron effect, because it's really good at absorbing shock, if you like. There you go.
Very good, I like that, thank you very much. So moving on, with my background, and for all those that don't know, I work within Premiership Rugby. I'm obviously pretty keen to look into concussion in rugby union, and I was very interested to see that the Premiership Rugby and the RPA and RFU have all pledged to take part in new studies on the issue. Obviously it's a very important topic in rugby, and the HIA and return to play protocols etc. have been around for quite a while. What are your thoughts on them?
In the past, when we're not even talking that long ago, sort of maybe 10 or 15 years ago, the standard practice for a concussion was, are you all right? Yep, okay, I'll carry on, fine. Limited at best, not that great. And then it sort of developed a bit to, essentially, it's a concussion test, which can be done quickly on the field. And effectively what that is, it asks you a few questions, just are you with it, basically. The biggest problem with this is, you imagine you've been concussed, you're sitting in the middle of the field, you're asked the question, where are we? What can you see as you're being asked that question? Ah, it's a scoreboard. So you've already been helped. Are you home or away, basically? And you can make a pretty good guess if you just have a look. You've got a 50-50 chance of guessing where you are. The sort of things asked, what date is it, what time is it, that sort of stuff. I mean, done in a locked white room, that's fine, but really the priority was get the player back on the pitch, not get the player off the pitch at that time.
Yeah, so in rugby they have started actually doing that more, so you now have a set period of time that you get taken off the pitch for, and you can return, and it doesn't cost you a substitution, so it doesn't cost you anything in the game, and that does add an extra layer of security, because the physios have got more time with the player, they can do a more thorough test with them. Do you think that definitely helps?
It's definitely a big move in the right direction. I'm all for that, because then the onus is really on the player welfare. It's not about getting them back on the field. And if after the allotted time you can't get them back on, you bring them off. There's no question about it. But my understanding with these tests is what they tend to do is they take the score. It's the SCAT-3 test that they'll be doing, which is a new version of concussion test for anyone who doesn't know. They take the score that they get after the potential concussion on the field and compare it to one that they've done already in the preseason. And if there's a big difference between the two, then they take them off. This is where the issue of sandbagging or deliberately doing badly in the preseason one, so it looks like you're doing okay when or if you've got a potential concussion, comes into play. We had a little talk from a doctor who works for a Premiership rugby team, and he was basically saying these guys were doing really badly on these tests, and they're pretty sharp guys, and they were doing deliberately badly. And I think that this is where education to the players is the biggest barrier, really, because the players themselves, they know what they're putting themselves into, but if they're getting to the stage where they've been concussed and they're not leaving the pitch, they really need to consider, okay, you know, I'm doing this for the welfare of myself in the long run rather than the rest of this match. And that's a very hard thing to do, especially when these guys are the most driven people on the planet. They are elite athletes. You don't become an elite athlete without being driven.
You are being paid to be out there on the field, aren't you? So you feel like you can't, you exactly. are letting your teammates down if you don't feel like you're going to go out there. But ultimately, they know what they're signing up for when they become a professional player. They know that they're going to get broken arms, etc. But they don't really know what the effects of concussion are. So if their education does get them to that point where they do realise that these things do have long-standing difficulties for them, they will more than likely say, "Yeah, that's fine. I'll take time to do it. It's fine." Cool. And the other thing in rugby union is they've now introduced this return to play protocol as well, so that you have tests throughout the week. If you have had a concussion on the weekend during the game, that you have to pass all of these tests to be able to be in contention for the next game. What are your thoughts on them?
Again, you know, these are only steps in the right direction, and it's just moving towards a more thorough take on getting the players back when only they're meant to be back. And some people, you know, they get back very quickly. They're largely fine after the event, or it takes them a bit longer. The biggest difficulty in the first sort of couple of days after concussion is really you're not meant to do anything, and I'm talking pretty much anything. I mean, reading, even watching TV is a little bit of a no-no. Certainly not looking at lots of words on a computer screen, that sort of thing. And that's quite difficult. And some people, it does take them a good while to sort of get back to it. I mean, I think you mentioned you've had a few concussions. I don't know what your experience
is. Yeah, that's right. So my most severe concussion, I was actually unable to see for a little while. And my sight did eventually come back. So it varies hugely. But yeah, your brain is ailing for quite some time. And obviously you use your brain for pretty much everything you do. So you are gonna feel it in just doing everything in normal day life.
I mean, I'm sure you were feeling quite groggy for quite a few days, and there's no way that you'd feel ready to go back to a Premiership level rugby match or an NFL game after that amount of time. So it's good, but there is an argument to say it's a bit too quick. 7 days, not necessarily enough. But
yeah. So it's a massively key topic that the NFL are looking closely into. They're paying a hell of a lot of money towards, and as touched on, the RPA, the RFU, Premiership Rugby, everyone's looking into it. But particularly this season, they're using the help of Birmingham University. So with your history at Birmingham, I was very interested to see what you thought about this study. And can you tell us exactly what is going on with Birmingham's study and what makes it so special?
Yeah, I can give you a little overview as to what's happening. So this is a study run up in Birmingham, obviously, by Professor Antonio Belli and my old supervisor, Dr. Michael Gray, who's now not at Birmingham. And essentially what it was a big battery of tests for Premiership or sort of professional rugby players to establish the sort of things that we can look out for to get a quick measure of whether or not somebody's had a concussion. So when I was involved, we basically got the guys in. We did a load of tests on them. So this is the SCAT-3 test. We did some saliva tests. We did some other just normal concussion tests. Some stuff like repeating numbers, a sequence of numbers back to you, but in reverse. Some memory tests, that sort of stuff. And then the stuff I was actually doing was called transcranial magnetic stimulation. But
oh, exciting.
Not many people care about it. And I don't think we found a lot. So yeah. So basically they came in for these in the preseason, and they were quite happy to do that because preseason is horrible, as everyone's aware. And they did all these tests and then they went away. And if they had a concussion at some point in the season, the doctor would be in touch with either our professor or the guys running the study. We'd then get them back pretty much as soon as possible. and repeat all the stuff that we did before, and essentially it's see whether we find any differences.
Yeah. So I understand that they're now going to be looking regularly at saliva and urine samples to try and identify early indicators of concussion. Is that right? And can you expand at all?
Yep. So the thing that had the most promise was these saliva and urine samples. So essentially, what they were looking for were things called biomarkers, and biomarkers, what they are. I know I'm doing a lot of definitions here, are sort of they're naturally occurring molecules, that sort of thing, can be characteristic of particular diseases or pathologies or that sort of thing. So effectively, you can look for biomarkers with any disease. If you find a biomarker is higher or lower for a given thing, then that can be an indication that a particular person has a particular disease. Without going into lots of detail, they basically looked at a few particular biomarkers, and they were looking, were there more of them or were there less of them after a concussion and during the recovery period compared to before they have the concussion. And essentially, just summarizing it, some of their biomarkers were greater after the concussion, some were lower. So this gives us a little indication that perhaps a saliva test can be done immediately after potentially concussive event on the field, to see whether or not the player has indeed been concussed, and then that can get them off. That's the dream scenario. The reality is a lot more work has to be done into it, but the RFU have obviously backed it, and I think most clubs are now getting involved in this study, which is brilliant, because it was really interesting doing that study. I'm not involved with it anymore, but I'm sure they're just developing it more and more.
Yeah, so it is getting all of that data in the bank, isn't it? It's continuing to get as much detail as we can on the issue.
Exactly.
We can't just rely on a small sample study. So I think it is important that the leagues and the clubs have put their backing behind it.
Yeah.
So that during the matches in this 2017-18 season, players with confirmed or suspected concussions will provide the samples, and they can be compared to players from the same game who didn't suffer head injuries. And therefore, that gives you a lot wider sample. So that is definitely a positive, and it's going in the right direction.
Sorry, just to pick up on one thing you said, that the best thing to compare compare somebody's concussion to is themselves. So it's always a little bit risky saying, I'm going to compare Jeff to Dave, because Jeff and Dave may have different baseline samples, that's why we do the baseline sample, to be able to see, okay, so what's changed in you? What's happened to you over the last period of time? So they all get given numbers and that sort of thing, and then you compare that guy before and after. But yeah, it's very cool stuff. It's been over 9 years of work, this, and it's going to keep going. So,
but it's not just sports like rugby or American football, is it, with these high impacts that football or soccer suffers with it as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, as I said earlier, we had that incident with Hugo Lloris. I remember in the World Cup, I feel like it was a Uruguay game where one of the players just went completely down and was, you know, clearly concussed and was just walking around a bit dazed, but he was essentially fighting with the medical staff to get back on the pitch. And I think that instance in particular was one that was cited. I think FIFA, or at least several football governing bodies, have now decided that the decision to be taken off for a concussion is totally out of the player's hands. The medical staff can just take them off.
As we've mentioned previously, that's the right thing to do in any sport.
100%. But even in the amateur level, when you don't have anyone around, if you start feeling a bit rubbish after making a tackle or going into a header or anything like that, it's not worth carrying on. You can only do yourself damage, essentially. So just get off the pitch, effectively.
Yeah, of course, because you do want to protect the sport, because it's, well, for one reason, worth a hell of a lot of money, but for two, it's the love of the game, and that's why we're doing this,
exactly,
this podcast, because we love sport.
Exactly.
But concussion has been an issue in the public domain for a relatively short space of time, hasn't it? So
yeah.
I guess that this will be a topic that will go on and on.
I mean, certainly in the UK, it's been accelerated over the last couple of years, thanks to the NFL, obviously, but there have been a couple of quite high-profile retirements from some players in rugby who have just been told, you know, look, you've had three pretty major concussions in your career, and saying three is the magic number is a bit of a cliche, but I think the consensus is, if you've had three, you probably should really think about hanging up your boots, certainly if you're a rugby player. But, you know, these guys love it. That's what they're paid to do. And you've got to be a brave bloke to go, yeah, I'm done. I can't risk this for me or my family anymore. Especially as a career after sport is probably another good topic for another podcast. But, you know, that you've seen lots of players getting into difficulty after they've retired. And, you know, if you're making that decision early before you've got a nice little nest egg to keep you going for a while, then, you know, it's a really big sacrifice. So kudos to these guys who have taken their welfare first. More incidences like this, we don't want them to happen, obviously, but the people making the right choices should be publicised and should be made. They're not elevated to hero status, but at least, you know, you can see this guy has made the right decision for himself.
He's looking after himself for the longer term, yeah, rather than just for short term gain.
There's always a life after sport, which is, you know, it's hard to see if you're an elite athlete. I get that, but it's important because that's most of your life. So.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we as youngsters, we all dream of being professional athletes, don't we? And exactly. To actually have that dream and you are living it, and then to turn your back on it and think, oh, I'm never going to do it again, I can only imagine it's a horrible thing to go through.
Yeah.
I guess it's only going to become a bigger and bigger issue as more people retire from the game and come out of the woodwork and more money exchanges hands till players are properly protected. Whether it can totally be eradicated from all sports, I don't know. But it's a noble quest and possibly highly unlikely. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think we're certainly moving in the right direction. If you went to the pub to watch a rugby game sort of five years ago, a player goes down and he stays down, a lot of the people in there be, oh, get up, that sort of thing. But there is a really, I won't call it harrowing because it's not particularly, but Brian O'Driscoll, one of Ireland's greatest ever rugby players, one particular match, he gets a concussion and he might actually get a couple, but he's effectively falling about. Just he can barely move and he can barely run. But, you know, he hides away from the game a bit, so it's not easy to spot. But luckily, people in the public, you can spot that now. And I think the public is certainly developing a greater acceptance to players leaving for concussion and that sort of thing. And I know certainly in rugby, I'm not sure if that's the case in the NFL, but I'm sure it is, that there are people employed to watch players to see if they are sort of falling about and being concussed or having potentially been concussed, should I say, which is great.
Yeah, that's right. So from my experience, we have a concussion spotter at our club, and they have a tablet in their hands. Brilliant. That they can watch any replays that they need to, and obviously watch the live action from a very good angle. And as soon as they spot anything, they've got a radio and they can radio any of the physios or doctor on the sideline and get them straight on to get them off the pitch. So that's definitely a good use of technology to further our protection of players.
Yeah, it's brilliant. I mean, we're not wanting to end these sports. It's very difficult to make huge changes as a result of it. But I think if we're doing preventative stuff like that, we're keeping a good eye on the players, we're resting them properly after they've got a concussion, all proper medical advice is sought and they're treated and that, you know, all this sort of stuff is taken into account. There's no reason that it should affect the game per se. But as long as there is that awareness to be able to go, right, you're out of the game, mate, it's not your choice anymore, then I think we can move on and we can be relatively happy with what's going on.
Yes. As you were saying with the public awareness of it, I think that does play a huge role. So every single week, sadly, or most weeks, I do see an incident on the pitch live in the stadium. And there used to be, as you say, people saying, "Oh, get up," or he's whistling, get the referee to try and carry on the game. But now there is a silence that kind of falls. People chit-chat amongst each other and let it kind of happen, and then there will always be a rousing round of applause whenever they get up from the incident. So I think that is a massive step towards the right direction for this kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. That's a brilliant little summary.
But we do simply need to do all we can to minimise the number of incidents and people affected by concussion, don't we? Fundamentally, that is what everyone's going to be trying to do over the next few years.
I will say that would be ideal, but you know, these sports, they're not going to change drastically to try and suit this. But I think having the awareness is the first major step. Rugby and American football, they are very different sports. And certainly rugby is, I think, doing more to the game than the NFL is to try and prevent concussions. I mean, as you said earlier, with the high tackles and that sort of thing. Yeah, it's difficult. I mean, these policymakers in each of the sports, they're really having a difficult time of it, because what do you do? Do you make the game effectively unwatchable and boring by removing a lot of the element that does make it fun? Who doesn't love seeing a guy get absolutely walloped by another 200, you know, 50 odd pound guy? So, you know,
I mean, there are endless YouTube highlights, aren't there, of big hits that anyone can find at any time. So that says it all. That's one of the reasons why everyone loves watching these sports, and by no means do we want to take that away. On that point then, maybe research is the key to finding out the true effects of each of these sports and on the athletes that we love that play them.
Well, let's hope so. Keep giving us your money and we'll look at it, basically.
Yeah, I suppose, because a lot of these sports that are involved in it, and as we've touched on, it's pretty much most big sports, both in the UK and in America. Because of that, surely more and more money will be thrown into research by clubs and leagues. And that can only be a good thing.
Yeah, well, you hope so. That'd be ideal.
That's it for the first episode of the Dugout Debate podcast. We hope you enjoyed it.
Don't forget to follow us on your podcast subscriber to get all of our new episodes. If you're on iTunes, please drop us a review and let us know what you think.
For all our latest updates, check out our Twitter and Facebook pages at @dugout_debate. Or alternatively, head over to our website, www.dugoutdebatepodcast.wordpress.com. We'll be back with the preview next Monday for our next episode in 2 weeks' time. So if you have any questions, let us know. Thanks for listening.
If you have any questions for us or topics that you'd like us to look into, get in touch with us on any of our social media platforms.